United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit is now in session. Please be seated.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Ninth Circuit. We have one case for argument this morning and three cases that have been submitted on the briefs. The cases that have been submitted are Delgado versus Madden, Rivera Rodriguez versus Blanche, and Marino versus Avon Financial. Our case for argument is Calderon versus Blanche. When counsel, when you're ready, you can step up to the podium. And please let us know whether you'd like to reserve any time for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Athena Doria for Petitioner Rolando Alberto Calderon. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
Petitioner presents a narrow issue, and that issue is whether the immigration judge applied the correct legal standard at the CAT reopening stage. Here, the immigration judge found a reasonable likelihood that Mr. Calderon would be detained as a suspected gang member. But at the very next link, the immigration judge asked whether the reported cases showed that more than 50% of roughly 80,000 detainees had been tortured and reasoned that a, quote, inordinate number, end quote, of deaths would need to be missing. That required the motion record itself to prove the ultimate CAT claim. Under Fonseca Fonseca and Lemus Escobar, the reopening question was only whether there was a reasonable likelihood that Mr. Calderon could establish CAT eligibility after reopening. The agency, therefore, used the correct label but applied the wrong burden.
Can I ask a question? Is there any evidence in the record that MS-13 members with tattoos face a higher risk of torture?
Yes, Your Honor. This is reported in Amnesty International report that there is a broad system-wide policy and targeting of gang members
But that's a different question, right? I'm asking about, does the presence of a gang tattoo increase your risk of torture? I'm not sure I saw that in the Amnesty International report, but if you have a page citation, I'd welcome it.
One moment, Your Honor.
You can provide it on rebuttal. Let me just ask, if there isn't...
Sorry.
Oh, do you have something? Go ahead, please.
And that much of the... Whoa, we have something very exciting going on with our microphones.
Can we pause the clock for a moment?
Yeah, let's get that.
So we can get our... Something went wrong with our sound.
All right. I felt like I was speaking to a crowd of thousands.
Judge
Graber, could you begin your question again? Because I didn't hear it. It went silent. And I couldn't tell. Was there an answer to my question, or is that going to be in rebuttal?
It's going to be in rebuttal, as I understood it. I'm asking both counsel to address the question whether there was adequate consideration given to other things besides people being killed in prison. That seemed to be their big focus. You know, not enough people are killed to count, but torture doesn't necessarily involve killing, and there's massive evidence of beatings and electric shocks and intentionally horrifying conditions and so forth. And it seems to me that was essentially ignored. And I'd like both of you to comment on that.
I agree, Your Honor. I believe that the judge inappropriately relied upon the reported numbers, which should not be taken as dispositive, also because of the the fact that there's evidence in the record that the state authorities are not being transparent and that it's difficult for independent monitoring agencies to get more statistical verification of what's happening inside of the detention centers. So what the judge also could have relied on and should have relied on in determining whether petitioner met this reasonable likely threshold would have had to, he should have also considered the fact that there are not only just merely anecdotes, but also looked at the fact that there were also fact-finding missions conducted by NGOs, human rights organizations, interviews with detainees, released detainees who survived, and their families. Also, these fact-finding missions also included research into court official and civil society records. So I agree, Your Honor, that the judge relied upon these numbers, and these numbers were not, should not have been used dispositively in his prevalence math logic.
Let me ask a follow-up question, if you don't mind. I didn't see any citation in your briefing to evidence that the petitioner was specifically at a higher risk of torture among those who are detained under the state of exception. So if that is the case, then would you agree that it wouldn't be error for the agency to look at the prevalence of torture among all of those detained under the state of exception? If it's the case that there is no evidence that this individual has a higher risk, then why is it error to look at the prevalence among all those detained?
It wasn't error to look at that, at those numbers, but it was error, a petitioner argues, to rely on those numbers as dispositive. The immigration judge says that that based on those numbers alone, a petitioner could not reach to show that 50% of the 80,000 detainees would be tortured in the detention centers. And with regard to Mr. Calderon's individualized risk factors, the judge did find that it would be reasonably likely that he would be detained. So that first step has already been met, and the next inquiry is whether the whether Mr. Calderon would be subject to torture himself. The country reports.
Let me ask, maybe I misunderstood your briefing. It seemed like you argue that the agency erred by looking at statistics about torture among the entire prison population. That's what I understood at least one of your arguments to be. Was that, did I misunderstand that?
To clarify, it would be the entire prison population that was detained.
Under the state of exception. I'm not talking about any other prison population.
Yes, under the state of exception, Your Honor. I'm specifically referring to the 80,000 detainees that the immigration judge referred to in his decision.
Is it ever possible for torture to be intentional and systemic, but still not prevalent enough that it's more likely than not that an individual would be tortured if removed? Are those two things possible?
Sorry, could you repeat that, Your Honor?
That torture could be intentional and systemic, not just, you know, a rogue outlier government official doing some isolated incident, but still not be prevalent enough that petitioner's risk of torture, if removed, is not more likely than not.
So with regard to that, Your Honor, I believe that would be a more appropriate under that question, and that analysis would be more appropriate at a merits level adjudication. At this stage, we're at the reopening posture. So right now we're looking at whether the there's a reasonable likelihood, more than a mere possibility, more than a mere chance, well, a realistic chance, but less than a more likely than not standard, that Mr. Calderon would be tortured in the detention centers.
Okay, well, same question then. Intentional and systemic, but is it possible not to be prevalent enough for reasonable likelihood of torture? Are those two things possible?
For it to be, there's systemic.
Not a rogue officer doing an isolated incident. Intentional and systemic, but still not prevalent enough to meet the threshold of reasonable likelihood.
I believe the record shows that there is a reasonable likelihood that petitioner would be subject to torture in the detention centers. Could it be that there is state abuse that is intentional and specific, but not as prevalent? That is an inquiry that would be, I believe, more appropriate under the at a merits level adjudication and not at reopening.
Counsel, assume that we, just for the sake of argument, that we agree with you that the agency abused its discretion when it denied your client's motion to reopen. Can you tell me as succinctly as you can how you'd like us to instruct the agency upon remand? What do you want us to tell them?
To apply the correct standard, that being a threshold standard. I do recognize that there is, we're trying to find out where we live between the reasonable likelihood and the more likely than not. It would be, petitioner would be asking not to just rely on the statistical numbers, especially considering that they're not reliable numbers and not reflective of the, not reflective of what is happening on a massive statewide scale.
Could I ask a more, I don't know if this is what Judge Thomas was getting at, but if we were to agree with you, is the bottom line to remand for the agency to reconsider reopening, or is the correct tagline to reverse and instruct the agency to reopen?
The latter, Your Honor. We would be requesting for the...
And what is your authority that we can do that?
Thank you, Judge Graber.
We're asking for that, the authority.
Do we have the authority to require them to reopen as distinct from the authority to tell them to take another look at the question of reopening?
We're asking for it to be vacated so that the correct legal standard can be applied.
Okay.
Okay, so they would reevaluate it. We're not instructing them.
Yes, it would be okay. Vacature for application of the correct standard.
Okay, thank you. Judge Koh, did you have any other questions now?
Oh, thank you.
Okay, Judge Graber. Okay, I'll give you 2 minutes on rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Christopher Dextra, and I am here on behalf of the United States Attorney General. The key question before you today, Your Honors, is whether the agency abused its discretion or committed legal error in denying Petitioner Calderon's motion to reopen. The agency correctly determined that Calderon did not establish prima facie eligibility for the relief sought. Calderon moved to reopen his proceedings so that he could seek deferral of removal pursuant to the regulation.
Counsel, we're familiar with the procedure. I'd like you to answer the question that I was posing to both of you. It seems to me that what the IJ did here was say, well, not very many people died and really did not come to grips in only speaking for myself in this question, with the extensive evidence here of systemic beatings and other severe mistreatment. And there's clear evidence that this was also an intentional governmental policy. But none of that was really dealt with, it seems to me, by the agency. So why wouldn't we send it back and require them to look at more than just how many people died?
Sure. Ultimately, it is the petitioner's burden to demonstrate that were the case to be reopened, that they would have to establish more likely than not probability.
Well, they might be able to. I mean, look at a case like Cole. It's very similar. It just seems to me that the standard to be met here is relatively low in terms of reopening as distinct from the merits.
Sure. So my point is simply that it's the petitioner's burden, and so there has to be evidence in the record that the petitioner can point to. And now,
well, there is. I just pointed to some of it. So, but the IJ didn't discuss it, and neither did the BIA. And so I'm not sure why we wouldn't require them to take another look at whether the petitioner met the burden.
There are clearly multiple instances, even systemic, that there are intentional beatings and harm being inflicted on people in El Salvador, but there's a different question to then determine the prevalence of that, determine how likely it is that someone would undergo
such
treatment.
Well, according to Amnesty and some of the other reports in the record, it's basically everybody gets beaten or electric shocked or otherwise severely maltreated.
The record demonstrates that there's people that suffer that. As to the actual statistics involved as to what that prevalence is, short of some sort of blanket statement from someone from an organization like the one you cited, it's very limited. And that's, of course, that's one of the arguments the petitioner makes, and that's something that the agency acknowledges, that there's limited statistics there. And so the ones that were available were the ones that the agency focused on, the ones dealing with beatings, those dealing with killings, which is a very small percentage, as well as those that came as a result of death and serious harm and torture. And so the agency was working off the information it could.
Would you agree with me that torture, the concept encompasses more than being killed?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
But the record is limited in terms of the information available to then determine the prevalence of that. And so the agency was going off the numbers available. Insofar as they're limited, that was, again, acknowledged by the agency that there would have to be an inordinate number of an undercount to then establish the ultimate burden, which, of course, is not what the agency applied here, but simply using that in the context of establishing, well, is it reasonably likely that were the case to be reopened on this record, were this case to be reopened, that they could establish
if the case is reopened, the petitioner has an opportunity to add to the evidence that we see in front of us now, correct?
Yes.
So the real question is whether there's enough here to warrant giving the petitioner that opportunity, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Where is there evidence in the record that the agency considered evidence of torture besides death?
Well, the agency does make multiple references to various country conditions reports in finding that there is that the reasonable likelihood standard is met as to the likelihood of detention. And so there the IJ on pages one second.
Well, I'm just looking at the IJ. Let's look at ER 87. That's all focused on deaths. I don't see consideration of evidence besides death. And would you agree that if the agency did fail to consider evidence of torture besides death, that would be legal error? If that occurred, would you concede that point?
If that occurred, yes. The agency did consider the whole record and went and focused on
all
the
right.
prevalence.
Let me ask you another question. If the agency didn't consider the government's intent to torture, would you concede that's legal error?
Sorry, could you repeat the question again? Sorry.
If the agency did not consider the government's intent to torture prisoners, would that be legal error?
Yes, but the agency did consider it. Yes.
All right. Would you agree that if the agency said, well, if someone's in lawful detention, that precludes intentional government torture? Would you agree that if an agency did that, that would be legal error?
If it's phrased exactly as you stated, yes. And if that actually happened, yes.
Okay. Would you agree that if the agency considered evidence that's contrary to the petitioners on a motion to reopen, that's legal error?
Sorry, could you repeat that again?
If the agency considered evidence to the contrary of petitioners' claim in a motion reopen, that would be legal error?
Uh, Could you rephrase the question? I'm just having trouble grasping exactly what you're asking.
Maybe I could take a try at it. Let's suppose that a petitioner presents a witness who says, I know that 83 out of 100 prisoners are beaten at least once a week. And then there is a contrary piece of evidence that says, well, nobody's ever beaten at this prison. Is the agency at the reopening stage supposed to ignore the contrary evidence for the purpose of deciding whether there should be a merits hearing?
There shouldn't be consideration taken of things that could count against petitioner. Yeah. So the information
should or should not. You agree that it should not be considered?
No. Well, the agency should consider information that's in favor of their stance to reopen.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want two more questions, if you don't mind. If the agency didn't consider evidence of the intentional denial of medical care, would that be legal error?
If they didn't consider it, yes. They should consider and review all of the information, all that's in the record, everything in the record.
If we were to agree that the petitioner established prima facie eligibility for CAT relief, should we instruct the BIA to reopen or ask it to reconsider the motion to reopen applying the correct legal standards?
The latter, Your Honor.
Why is that?
Well, that is what opposing counsel is asking for here, as was clarified moments ago, and I'm not aware of any authority for the former option. Any other questions?
Not for me. Judge Koh, do you have any other questions?
No, thank you.
Okay. We don't have any other questions. You have a minute and a half if there's anything else you'd like to say.
So just to conclude, I guess, the agency here did apply the correct standard. The board affirmed that decision, concluding that the IJ had applied the appropriate standard. Motions to reopen are particularly disfavored in removal proceedings. Because the agency's decision was not arbitrary, rational, or contrary to law, the agency did not abuse its discretion. Accordingly, the court should deny Mr. Calderon's petition for review.
Thank you very much. You can proceed. Thank you.
Sorry, Your Honor. I just wanted to address on rebuttal the evidence that individuals that have tattoos are profiled and detained as suspected gang members. There is a page on, it's page 271, and that is the Amnesty International report. And it describes that the individual markers that state authorities are looking at include having tattoos. There's also a La Prensa article on page 560 where state authorities explain that they detained someone because one of the reasons being that he had tattoos. And this is specifically to people that are detained under the state of exception. And then just lastly, I did want
you to... You would agree that's not evidence that they're tortured at higher rates, right? That's just evidence that they're detained, and the agency here found that Mr. Calderon would be detained.
Yes, Your Honor. I did want to clarify that our argument would be that he would be... there's a reasonable likelihood that he would be subject to the same intentional state abuse in the detention centers because he's being detained under the state of exception. And the state's treatment of those who are detained under the state of exception is a targeted and statewide system and practice. And then I did also just want to draw a comparison between this case and Lemus Escobar. And Lemus Escobar...
Okay, well, you're out of time, so let me just see if whether either of my colleagues have any other questions.
I don't.
Graver,
Judge
Koh.
No, thank you.
Okay.
No, thank you.
I think we understand your position. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. We thank both counsel for their helpful arguments this morning. This case is now submitted, and we're in recess until tomorrow morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
All rise. This court stands in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Thank you, Kwame. Okay, thank you so much.